Now, if we look through all these documents, we see a list of organizations which Kazakhstan wants to cooperate with. And most come to the fore are, let's say, Eastern organizations, after the UN, of course, the Commonwealth of Independent States, the Collective Security Treaty Organization, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the Customs Union, which is going to be the Eurasian Economic Union, and then you get Western organizations. Is everybody familiar with these organizations like Shanghai Cooperation Organization and Collective Security Treaty Organization? I see, yes, so. Okay, I don't have to explain it then. Now, because in the Netherlands, for a Netherlands audience, you have to explain it, because they wouldn't even know where Kazakhstan is, let be these organizations. Okay. Secondly, if you see what are the most favored countries to cooperate, well, these are Russia, China, Central Asian states, and then later on you get Western states, the USA, European states, etc. So you can clearly see that in the enumeration of cooperation actors, a preference to the East. Okay, this is the whole theory. So this is a sort of combination of all the aspects of the security documents. I'm coming now to some sub-conclusions on these documents before I enter into the realm of the actual security policy as it is today. Do you have any questions so far on the contents of these security documents? Is that all clear? Well, I'm happy to hear that. Okay. And again, if you have questions, or well, you can also have a debate already, we'll see what happens then. Okay, so my conclusion. So if you don't agree, just tell me and we can have a discussion. Now, as I said, the foreign policy concept mentions five security documents: the Constitution, the Military Doctrine, the Law on National Security, the Kazakhstan 2050 strategy, and of course the foreign policy concept itself. Now, if you look at the theory of national security documents, you would in general have a national security strategy, as the US has, and as, well, of course we did it a little bit different, but in the Netherlands we also have such kind of document, and the Russians also have that. Now, then, if you read this law on national security, then you see that a national security strategy is mentioned. But I was not able to discover it. And then in one of the foreign articles, it was listed that this document was supposed to be secret. And, well, I've asked some high-ranking officers, and yes, this national security strategy is a secret document. But the funny thing is, it is listed in some of the open security documents, but it is never mentioned that it is a classified document. So, now then, this is all from a conceptual point of view. I'm not talking about, you know, details and comparisons. So, if you want to talk about, well, if the structure is all right, what about the contents? You miss this national security strategy because it's not available in public. Now, but this law on national security, again, this is only available in Kazakh and Russian, but it's listed on the websites. I think this one is listed on, well, it is listed on the Ministry of Defense website, and I think also on the website of the President. Actually, this law on national security covers all the ingredients of what a normal national security strategy also would have. That is, the different security types, the national interests, the threats, and the actors for ensuring national security. Now, so in my opinion, this public document, the law on national security, fulfills the role which should be fulfilled by the national security strategy, but it's classified. It is a political strategy. So it fulfills, in my idea, in current day policies, this fulfills the role of a political strategy, a grand strategy, as the national security strategy would be. So, in my idea, it sort of replaces this classified national security strategy. If you look at the other documents, and also if you look at, let's say, the normal approach, conceptual approach of national security documents, then the combination of the law on national security, the military doctrine, and the foreign policy concept, those are the most important basic documents of Kazakh security policy. Of course, the constitution has some aspects about security policy in it, especially who is responsible for what. And you will see in the constitution that, of course, since it is a presidential system, that the president is in the lead when there are problems with national security. The Kazakhstan 2050 strategy also has some security aspects, but mainly deals with all other aspects of society. And therefore, I consider these three documents as the leading documents. And so, hence, most of the entries I have mentioned come from these three documents, and to a lesser extent, they are derived from the Kazakh 2050 strategy and the constitution. All of these documents rightly recognize that security is much more than a political and a military approach, since they also describe public information, economy, energy, environmental issues, health, whatever. And that is the what is commonly known in the West as the broad concept of security. And you will also find this in the national interests and threats. The broad concept, but also the emphasis on interaction and a joint approach of all actors involved in security, that really informs to modern security thinking, as we know it in the US and in Europe, but also corresponding with Russian security thinking. So again, the Kazakh policymakers have paid well attention to the security documents available abroad. Also concurrent with modern security thinking, we see that energy security is a vital security factor. This is one of the items which comes to the fore in the different security documents time and time again. And then, for instance, by stating that energy infrastructure should be protected, energy dependence, sustainable development, the legal status of the Caspian Sea, which is still not arranged, so that is a possible threat, and the protection of national interests of Kazakhstan in the territorial sea, continental shelf, etc. So energy is an important factor, and again, this is also concurrent with current modern security thinking. Another aspect is that repeatedly you will see mentioned in these documents the Eurasian Economic Union, as it is going to start in January, which is now still based upon the customs union between Russia, Belarus, and Kazakhstan. And they mention aspects of border protection, that border protection is important as to guarantee the customs union. And it's also important as part of the Eurasian economic integration. Next point. I already mentioned that the enumeration of cooperation actors reveals a preference to the East. Well, this is not surprising, because Kazakhstan is a former Soviet republic. And if you look at its geopolitical situation between Russia and China, that makes sense, of course, that these countries, and the most important organizations in the area are mentioned first. However, you see that a number of other Western countries, the US, the UK, Germany, are mentioned, and also Western organizations as OSCE, well, OSCE is of course Western and Eastern, the European Union and NATO and its cooperation are also stressed, because Kazakhstan claims to have a multi-factor policy, so not only directed on one, let's say, specific region, but much broader. And so although there is a preference to the east, this is, well, understandable, but you cannot say that Kazakh security policy is aimed only to the east. It's really to all sides. Okay, well, this was the part on the theory, and now we're going to take a look at the factual policy in international arena. Because the basic question of the lecture is the theory, the security documents, is that in line with the factual policy in the international arena? Are they concurrent? Any questions so far? Yeah?
So most of these documents are new. The five documents you mentioned from 2012 and 2014. Mm-hmm. In your knowledge, is there a change in theory? I mean, has anything changed in Kazakh security thinking, just in terms of the theoretical and the documents from the past? Is there anything particularly new for Kazakh security policy, especially the newest 2014 document you mentioned?
Yeah, that's the foreign policy concept.
Yeah.
No, I would. Well, what I have read is that, for instance, earlier editions of the military doctrine gave a more positive approach to cooperation with the West, NATO. That has gone down a little bit. But it's of course hard to say how it is.
Yeah.
I mean, the practice, you can see both things, because they've had this Step Eagle exercises, this time in Germany, with NATO, what they do each year. But if you only look at the way it is mentioned, then apparently the cooperation with military cooperation with NATO is a little bit less than it used to be, than earlier versions of the military doctrine. But I wouldn't say that. I did not encounter anything very special in this latest foreign policy concept. It's all, well, quite understandable and nothing special, not that you think, well, why are they saying this? And as I said, a couple of items are not mentioned specifically when they talk about competition between big powers. Who are they talking about? Or certain threats, as you go more into detail, they, for instance, mention specifically threats of manipulation of information. I will have some interesting conclusions about that. Sort of information warfare, cyber warfare, the possibility of changing the information streams of Kazakhstan. But it doesn't mention by whom. Now, my guess is, and that's of course a guess, that in the national security strategy, which is classified, that more specifically mentions actors that are a threat. That would sound logical, of course. And they don't mention it here, because then you might already have a problem with these same actors. So they keep it to themselves. So then we are allowed to make the conclusions to what extent, why might that be the case? But the problem is, of course, you're making assumptions. I mean, to that extent, and as I've said, for many years I've studied Russian security policy. Well, that's more easy. The Russian security documents have always stated that NATO and the USA are threats or dangerous or to the same world. Always. Even in the times of Medvedev or in the times of Yeltsin, always NATO and the West and the US were considered to be threats. But that's very explicit. But this is also due to the fact that they have this multi-factor policy. They don't want to create enemies. So therefore, it's better to keep it, well, on a general level, and simply mentioning that there might be threats from this and that side. But that also, of course, creates guesses. So that's the hard thing. But if you look at the foreign policy, it's not much. You can download it. I think it's 10 pages. There's nothing special. It's all very common, and that stays, of course, with the multi-factor policy. If you look at the contents of the foreign policy concept, Russia nor the West would be, let's say, alarmed by it. It's acceptable for any party because there's nothing, let's say, angry in it, as you would, for instance, read in the Russian security documents. Also not surprising, but they're very clear in stating who is the enemy and who is not. So it's perfectly in line with the whole thinking. Okay, now the factual policy. I didn't describe that so much in detail, but I can talk a lot about it.
So the fact that these documents are available online,
mm-hmm.
did that surprise you? Is it a common practice for Central Asian states?
Well, what I've read is that it's different. Mm-hmm. Some states do not publish anything,
mm-hmm.
and some states also would publish a national security strategy.
Mm-hmm.
The one document here, well, there might be others, but at least from this one, I know because I also checked it with leading military officers, and they acknowledged. But the funny thing is, they don't mention in the security documents that this document is classified, so therefore I thought, okay, where is it? And some other people have told me, yes, it's available. But they were lower ranking, so.
Mm-hmm.
So there is differences in Central Asia.
Because I think Uzbekistan doesn't publish anything.
That's right, and I think Turkmenistan either.
Yeah.
But you can clearly say, but we'll come to that now, Kazakhstan is, of course, the country that is most involved with the West as well. So then it also makes sense to be more transparent in your security policy. Okay, now I've taken a look at what the actual topics are in security. It's of course a mixture of foreign and security policy. I've put it in bullets, but I will talk much more in detail about it. Now, when it comes, and of course you will see the the same actors as I've listed, which are the actors which they have most cooperation with, both countries and organizations that are mentioned for the security documents as well. Now, if we take Russia, recently a friendship and good neighborly treaty has been signed. I think it was a new one. And also a treaty for military cooperation. Now, interestingly, the one on military cooperation is not so interesting, but the one on good neighborly relations is, to the extent that there has been a huge discussion in Kazakh parliament about this document, because it says that Russia and Kazakhstan conduct a joint foreign policy, not security, but foreign policy. And it was for me interesting to see in statements by the Kazakh press agency Tengri News that apparently a lot of senators were worried about this content. So they said, okay, so Moscow is sort of going to dictate what our foreign policy is, or if we have any foreign policy initiative, do we first have to comply this with Moscow? Well, and one of the deputy ministers of foreign affairs, Musinov, tried to ease that down in the discussions, and he said, no, it's just general statements that we agree on the same line and all that. But I have my doubts if the worries are away. So then the question is, why would Kazakhstan do this? Because, again, when I come back to my main question, is are the security documents in line with the factual policy? Well, then, if you look at national interests, such as having an independent policy and your constitutional order and sovereignty. Because even, of course, I come from the European Union. The European Union has this sort of common foreign and security policy by the Italian lady of whom I have forgotten the name because she's just new. It used to be Baroness Ashton. But you will see in the European Union that in spite of this common foreign policy, that each country takes its own stance. If you, for instance, take Britain with their, well, rather severe anti-immigration laws, but also other aspects, each European country will still do its own thing, because the last thing you will give up in a supranational organization as the European Union is your foreign security and defense policy. You might cooperate with justice because you've got transnational crime and all that, and of course your economic policy, but this is what you won't give up. So therefore you could say it is surprising that this friendship and good neighborly treaty mentions a joint foreign policy. But it's a good thing that you can see that apparently not everybody in parliament agrees with that. Then another thing, I'm just picking out things that worry me and that will lead to some conclusions, obviously. Media. There, it has also been in Kazakh press that two-thirds of the some 250 television channels in Kazakhstan are Russian, and these are subsidized by the Kremlin. Hence, they get a certain amount of information, no doubt about the situation in Ukraine. And again, you might ask, if you look upon the objectives of national security policy about having a sovereign policy and all that, what about these media? Because on the other hand, they also mentioned things like information warfare, manipulation of information. Or is this what is meant by manipulation of information? We don't know. But obviously, when you have two-thirds of the television channels in Kazakhstan being sent from Russia and subsidized by Russia, hence it's the talk of the Kremlin, well, you might have your doubts about, objective information flow. So that's another, concern if I would look upon the cooperation with Russia. Now, and then, maybe the most important one is the so-called Ukraine scenario. A quarter of the population of Kazakhstan is ethnic Russian. The majority of them live in the northern provinces. This summer there was a sort of row between Putin and Nazarbayev that Putin declared that it was so nice that Nazarbayev created a state out of nothing because there had never been a sort of state, and there were some more statements made by that. So and in response to that, Nazarbayev said, well, okay, and when we talk about Eurasian Union, which is supposed to be only economic and not political, if the sovereignty of my country is threatened, I will withdraw. This was in the same time period as the remarks by Putin about Kazakhstan, well, whether it should be a independent state or was really an independent state, or that it could better be under a Russian, leadership. That is one aspect. And then, of course, when it comes to Ukraine, so Nazarbayev, no doubt, realizes quite well that with this substantial Russian minority of 25%, which in the northern provinces, which used to be Russian, of course, it's much larger, that it is a danger. So what has happened in eastern Ukraine, again, I'm saying this, you won't find this in the media, of course, but of course this is they realize this, that this is a danger. And that also, if you take into account these Russian subsidized media channels, it's not unthinkable that if Putin would like to do that, that he could also create a an uprise by the Russian minority there. So they take that into account, of course. Also because people like Zhirinovsky in Moscow have made claims about, well, it's about time that these northern provinces would go back to Russia. And so you do see a fear, and you also see a very cautious policy by Kazakhstan when it comes to the whole Ukraine thing. Because they want to avoid taking any steps, any statements that might bring a Ukraine scenario closer. So that's a little bit about Russia and the cooperation and the scenario which is saying. Though you can also see that Kazakhstan has taken countermeasures. For instance, in the beginning of this year, they have this law about the return of Kazakhs from abroad, as the Israelis have this aliyah. And at first, they wanted to place all these people from abroad, so from mainly from other Soviet, former Soviet republics, in the northern areas, of course, to enhance the ethnic Kazakh population there. Now they've given that away, but I mean, you can see this as a measure of counterbalancing Russia or Russian ideas in that area. Any questions about that? Okay, then China. Kazakhstan conducts a good economic cooperation with China. China is involved in the oil exploitation in the Kazakh part of the Caspian Sea. There is a gas pipeline between Kazakhstan and China. That, of course, is not to the liking of Putin. And this is interesting that you can see that in this way Kazakhstan tries to diminish, let's say, the overweight of Russia by having a good economic and energy cooperation with China. As to Afghanistan, President Nazarbayev has explicitly said how happy he was with the Western involvement in Kazakhstan. Of course, they are worried about the future. Kazakhstan supported the NATO transport route, the Northern Distribution Network. And Kazakhstan also supports directly Afghanistan with a number of socio-economic measures. I think direct food support, but also other socio-economic aspects. Then when we come to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which is political, economic, and security cooperation, it's interesting to see that last year the Kazakh Minister of Foreign Affairs made the suggestion that the SCO should cooperate with NATO. And my guess is that would be on Afghanistan. And as you might know, NATO has always declared that they don't want to cooperate with the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, but even less with the Collective Security Treaty Organization, a military alliance, because it is dominated by Russia. And then it's interesting to see that Kazakhstan takes the point of view that, well, there should be cooperation between SCO and NATO. Then the Collective Security Treaty Organization. Of course, they are well aware of the threat from Afghanistan. Their collective response force is mainly posed against that threat. But we have to say, if you look at this collective response force, you're mainly talking about Russian forces. I think the military base in Dushanbe is considered to be part of that, and also the one in Kyrgyzstan, in Kant. They do exercises. Last September, there was an exercise of CSTO in Karaganda, in Kazakhstan. So the Afghan threat is a major concern for the CSTO. Then the Eurasian Union, the upcoming Eurasian Union as of January, close economic ties between the different countries. So we have Russia, Kazakhstan, Belarus, and Kyrgyzstan, and I think Armenia. And who will be next in the line? Did I forget anybody? Well, I would guess Tajikistan will also join. The usual subjects, I would say. But Sergei Lavrov, the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Russia, has repeatedly said that this is only to be economical and not political. But that is, of course, the big question. Then, cooperation with the West, the OSCE, the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. Kazakhstan had the, as the first, let's say, former Soviet Republic or Eastern country in 2010, the presidency. With the European Union, recently Kazakhstan and the EU agreed on this enhanced partnership and cooperation agreement with a lot of aspects, including security aspects. With NATO, there's a substantial cooperation. I think Kazakhstan is for a former Soviet country on the highest level of cooperation, Partnership for Peace, annual exercise, Step Eagle, and there is a Partnership for Peace training center, KazZen, in Almaty, where they train on, let's say, military operational aspects, especially for peacekeeping operations. Then the issue of Iran. Kazakhstan is on the forefront of nuclear disarmament due to the fact that they had Semipalatinsk, the Soviet nuclear test site. You can see that they are very much involved in cooperating with Iran. I think in September, Rouhani, the new Iran president, was at our university. Every, let's say, dignitary is always received at our university with a speech. So you can see that Kazakhstan is quite well involved in this policy of Iran, and but also in Iran and the negotiations as they're going on. I think they're still going on, aren't they not? Sort of, where they were prolonged. And of course, the aim is to prevent Iran gaining nuclear arms. And that's part of this non-proliferation policy of Kazakhstan, which has done a good job of the international image of Kazakhstan. Also, when we look at last, when was it? March, at the Nuclear Security Summit in The Hague, when President Kazakhstan got the VIP treatment, meeting the King and the Prime Minister and everybody, recognizing the role that Kazakhstan takes in nuclear disarmament. Any questions so far?
How much of peacekeeping operations is Kazakhstan involved in, and where? You mentioned.
Well, come to think of it, I think nowhere. I think a couple of years ago there was the idea that a number of Kazakh officers would go to Afghanistan, but I think the Senate prevented that.
Mm-hmm. They were sent to Iraq.
Oh, Iraq, yes.
They were sent
Iraq,
to
yeah,
Iraq at
there
that
were
time,
people killed.
And then after they were, when the US stopped the operation, they left, and then it was refused
for Afghanistan.
For Afghanistan.
Yeah, but that's right. I forgot Iraq, and some people got killed there, huh? At least one. Yeah.
I was wondering if you have noticed anything from the front of ISIS. I don't know if you're getting to it yet. I know they've been recruiting a lot from the Western countries, the European and the United States.
Yeah.
Have you seen any like evidence of them going into Central Asia, more specifically Kazakhstan, to recruit any?
I'm going to talk about that.
Okay.
Yeah. Because that is not covered in security documents, but that's obvious because ISIS was not there yet. Yeah, but that's a major concern, by the way. It's a major concern.